The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Trade talks break down and tariffs increase. On top of that, markets swoon. And our guest today is Brian Shannon from alphatrends.net. All this and much more on episode number 611 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a good day to you. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged with John C. Dvorak. We do that on Tuesday nights, live and streaming. So if you want to join us over there, you can do so over on dhunplugged.com at 9 p.m. Eastern time. We talk about all sorts of really fun things on that show. But before we get to the guest today and go through some of the important areas of technical analysis, which is Brian Shannon's forte, I thought we would spend a little bit of time just mentioning some things that are going on and try to reconcile what is going on with these trade talks, which seem to be a big overhang for markets. The problem is that we have, on one hand, this great discussion and wonderful meetings and lovely letters that are being sent by China to the United States, and these meetings with these handshakes and hopeful resolutions that seem to be going absolutely nowhere. And whether or not it is our fault here in the U.S. or whether it's China's fault on what they seemingly broke in terms of the trade agreements, I have no idea, because on one hand, we're looking to really clamp down on some things that, they've been abusing us for years. We know that. But at the same time, now what we're doing is we're telling them how to change their overall economic blueprint of how they manage their country. And I'm not quite sure they're going to allow for that. But nonetheless, last week, just after I finished the show, President Trump tweeted that, we're going to be increasing the tariffs on the $200 billion tranche of goods that are being sent here from 10% to 25%. And no wonder markets decided to get a little squirrely. When we saw the S&P down and over 2%, NASDAQ down over 2%. And global markets really had a tough time at the beginning of the week, came back towards the end of the week when there was once again some hope that the trade deal is going to continue and we'll get something done eventually. Markets were a little bit toppy to begin with. Fundamentals and valuations were starting to get a little bit stretched. So anything could have really shot the elevation down. We could have seen some kind of deflation, or maybe even a little contraction, or just a general overall need for the markets to absorb some of the nice upside that we've seen over the last several months. So whether it was this or whether it was just the timing of this as the impetus for, let's take some chips off the table, whatever it may be, the fact is now we have to contend with the idea that we have a 25% tariff on $200 billion worth of goods. And many of the goods that weren't necessarily hard hit before, like telecommunications and some technology, are now going to see some significant amount of increase in overall cost. Now, one of the things that has been swirling around is this whole idea of, we're going to make China pay. China's going to be paying. President Trump has been discussing this whole idea that, if China is not going to agree, we're going to impose these tariffs. They're going to be paying all this money. This money is going to be coming into the Treasury as a tax, and they're going to pay. Similar to the Mexico is going to pay for the wall. Problem is, if you understand tariffs, it's not the country that's shipping the product that's paying the tariff. It's the receiving country and those companies that are buying those products. So when we look at this and we start thinking about, okay, if that's the case, who does it hurt? Well, of course, it's going to hurt China. It's going to hurt China from the aspect that their country's products, their exports, are going to cost more money for those that are buying them in the U.S. And so now what's going to happen is we're going to look for different alternatives. They're going to be looking for different places to buy those products. So yes, that hurts their economy because their exports will be looked upon as more expensive than others. But yet at the same time, the actual duty, the actual cost, the tax, the tariff that is brought into the country here is not paid by China. It's paid by the companies that actually get the product here, those receiving them. And if you really want to drill it down and look at who's going to pay for this, it's you, it's me, it's all of us in the U.S. Any of the consumers of those goods are the ones that are going to be paying for the actual products. So whether it essentially increases prices, therefore increasing inflationary pressures artificially, whether it makes for us to seek alternatives like other countries that are producing products at a lower cost, or maybe even buy American. That's the hope. The hope is that American products will be cheaper. But here's the rub. We saw what happened with steel. Great example. One of the first tariffs that were put on was on the steel companies that we were importing products from China. And at first, the steel companies did really well. But if you take a look at U.S. Steel as a great example of when the tariffs were put on till now and the stock price of it, miserable, absolutely miserable. One of the things that happens is that companies here will start to increase their pricing initially because they can now charge more and still be competitive against the products that were being brought in before. If the product that was brought in before is now, let's say it starts out at a dollar and now it's $1.25 with the tariff. And let's say the product in America was a dollar. Well, American companies can say, you know what? If we push it up to $1.15, we're still competitive. So they have some pricing opportunity and the ability to bring up prices again, which costs you and me more money for the same product. The tariffs have no place long-term in an economy that relies on a global basis for product manufacturing, as well as for any kind of products that are brought in from anywhere else. There is just no place for this. And the insane idea that we are going to benefit from this because money is brought into the treasury, which it does, is absolutely ludicrous. Even though it's being framed that way, being talked about, oh, you know, it's a great thing. You know what? Better than a trade deal, President Trump said this week, better than a trade deal, let's just keep on increasing tariffs. Then we will level the playing field. But unfortunately, what it does, again, is at the end of the day, if you take away all the excess and all the rhetoric, it costs more money for the product. Now, what is the Treasury going to do with that money? Are they going to subsidize farmers? Are they going to throw it back as tax benefits to the individual or the company or companies? I don't know. But it doesn't do anything more than hurt not only our economy, which is expected to see about a 0.5% decrease in GDP due to the tariffs, and other countries that we import from, in particular China. They're talking about a 1 to 1.5% decrease in GDP because of these. So let's stay on focus and let's not get crazy about the whole idea that there is this idea that, yeah, tariffs are a good thing. It's really punishing the other country. Yes, it punishes the other country, but at the same time, it punishes us here too. It will lead to inflation due to pricing pressures. And if they then put on retaliatory tariffs then our exports become more expensive as well. And it, again, shoots ourselves in the foot. Nothing good. There is nothing good that comes out of these tariffs. All right, enough of that. Let's make sure we stay in, no matter what we hear out there, let's make sure we're clear on how these things work and who pays them. Before we get to guests, I want to mention that a lot of people, a lot of listeners, and thank you, have taken advantage of the special offer that we have this month in the month of May. I mentioned it last week, and I'll mention it each week throughout the month of May, that Investology, our advisor-crafted and technology-enhanced hybrid robo platform, where it gives you a global allocation with institutional-based mutual funds and ETFs. We manage the process along with you, $10,000 minimum, investology.com. We're giving away an Investology challenge coin as well as a signed book, The Disciplined Investor, that I wrote. And we're going to send that to you for anybody that opens and funds an account in the month of May. So make sure you do that. You can go over to investology.com. You can click on the button that says start crafting my portfolio, and it will easily take you through the process. Really cool process of just a questionnaire and then adjustments by you to see where you lie on the risk tolerance and time horizon to then create a portfolio. It's all there laid out for you. Really nice. So check that out over on investology.com. Otherwise, I'll mention one more thing. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, ask questions. Any questions you have that you want to hear on the air or that you have for me under the Ask Andrew button, just go right there and send in your comments, your concerns, your updates, your thoughts, any questions that you have that maybe we can then rebroadcast on the podcast. All right, let's get right to our guest, why don't we, and see what he has to say, because I think that Brian is one of those guys that you really want to listen to closely. He has a breadth of knowledge that's incredible regarding technical analysis, charting. And let's get right to that. And our guest today is a longtime favorite, an old friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. It must be 10, 12 years. Brian Shannon from alphatrends.net, the go-to guy for technical advice on the markets, charting and all that. Brian, what's going on?
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for the nice introduction there. It's been probably 10, 12 years, like you said. We're really kind of the beginning of the whole Twitter thing, and you've been at the forefront of the podcasting. So you've been doing this. I can't tell you how many podcasts I see out there these days.
I know. And most of them suck, let's be honest.
This is true.
So I wanted to talk to you about a variety of things because, you know, there's a lot of talk and conversation and questions I get all the time about, you know, hey, you know, I'm looking at this stock and I look at the PE ratio and I look at that and this. And, you know, sometimes there's some talk about, well, what do I do here in terms of, you know, I don't understand what should I be looking for on the charting and all. And I thought what I would do is have this conversation with you about technical analysis, which is your forte. You are the master of this. And I thought we'd start with a question and get your thoughts on what exactly is technical analysis?
Great question. For perfect place to start. It's really the study of price behavior. And what we're doing is looking at, as people always point out, is past information to see what trends are developing. The trend is your friend is one of the things they say. But what we want to do is identify where a trend is and then be able to use that information and come up with a trading plan. So even if you find your idea with a fundamental analysis to start out, technical analysis allows us to then use that price information to time our trades better and come up with an objective risk reward ratio for that trade. I'm not sure I did a great job explaining it there, but
but here's the thing. So a lot of people think that I want to look at things like what are the earnings and what's the growth of revenue and what's happening on the various conference calls. That's all important and good information. But technical analysis encompasses the entirety of what's happening right here and right now, right? It's not a projection necessarily of the future. And I'm going to give you back your line, which I use a lot, by the way, which is it's only price that pays. And correct. And the whole point is, if all the fundamentals line up and the backdrop of the economy is good and we have everything that's really playing out and looking terrific, the fact is that the stock may not be reacting correctly, right? So the technical analysis then, what happens from there?
Well, if the stock isn't expecting or behaving the way you would expect it to based on the fundamentals, you have to ask why. Well, because somebody else is seeing something or expecting something down the road, and they're saying, I'm getting out of this stock today because I didn't like the way their margins look, or we're cutting our position for whatever reason. But it's about supply and demand. Is money flowing into the stock or out of the stock? And it doesn't matter how good the story is or what the PE ratio is. The fact is, if money's flowing out, it's just a bad stock at that time. You're better off just waiting for things to stabilize or to reemerge into a new uptrend. I like to say, you know, people look at technical analysis and say, well, you know, the 50-day moving average, I buy pullbacks to the 50-day moving average. And that's a little bit of technical analysis. That's really kind of uneducated enough to hurt you. Technical analysis, similar to it's similar to and almost as useless as saying, "Well, the PE is cheap," you know, because I buy a stock with a 15 PE because that's undervalued relative to the market. Well, it doesn't tell you anything about the future projections. The 50-day moving average doesn't mean it's going to halt there. It's one piece of a very complicated puzzle, a 50-day moving average, in the price study action, just like the PE ratio is a very small part of fundamental analysis. You have to take the whole, all of the ingredients and mix them together until you get the correct recipe for your time frame, which is one of the most important things that technical analysis allows you to do, so that you can, again, control risk. That's, as you always point out as well, risk management. That's, yep, you know, really what success comes down to in the markets.
You know, the one thing that I always explain to people when they ask me about the 50-day, the 100-day, the 150-day, the 200-day, and the, you know, the different ways of describing it is this. It's very simple that there are a bunch of people that look at these different things. 50-day and 200 are the two key, 100 to a degree. But if we know the institutions are just robotically and mindlessly and unconsciously saying that, you know, if the stock gets down to its 50-day average or the index gets down to its 50-day average, that's where I'm going to be buying, then you know what? They are making that a truth. And what's happening is there you can follow along to some degree. That doesn't mean that there is an actual reason that the 50-day average is – there's no magic in these moving averages, is there?
Not that I'm aware of. The magic is that, as you point out, they tend to be a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the key to understanding, really understanding technical analysis isn't just saying, okay, a moving average or recognizing a cup and handle or head and shoulders, but instead to understand the psychology of it. And as you just pointed out, a lot of institutions will place orders near a rising 50-day moving average. Well, if you think about what doesn't happen at a rising 50-day moving average, you typically don't see sellers there either because people have been trained, hey, it's pulling back to the rising 50-day moving average. I'm not going to sell my stock. If they hit, you know, if the stock was 8% above the 50-day moving average, an institution might sell some off till it's 2% away from that 50-day moving average, and then they might stick bids in as well. So there's lack of supply from either shorts who are trying to push the market down because they say, you know, it's foolish to short into a rising 50-day moving average, or the natural longs that aren't selling because of that. And then you have sideline cash saying, hey, I've missed out on this stock. I'm going to stick some bids in there at that 50-day moving average. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, less supply, more demand, prices stabilize, and then someone gets motivated again to get a little bit more aggressive, and the stock begins another rally away from that 50-day moving average, or it fails. And if it fails, then you just move to the sidelines and say, I don't understand this. I'm not going to stick around for large losses and try to argue with the market. But there has to be rules, you know, based, or at least guidelines, not necessarily rules, but guidelines.
One of the things you do is you do a regular market recap, we'll call it, right? You do these great videos where you explain a lot that's going on. You have a lot of freebies out there. You have subscriptions too and things like that and coaching and all the different things that you do. I know that. But one of the things, and you trade, obviously, for your own money. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because something's been bothering me I've been watching this and thinking about it. And every time I grind my teeth when I see this, and it's this whole focus on an indicator, a charting indicator, that seems to be used on a regular basis on, let's just say, as an example, CNBC. They talk about this relative strength on a regular basis. And I'm thinking to myself, there are so many more indicators that you could use. Why are they focusing on this relative strength one? And what is the importance there? Is it just something that they all sort of caught on to and they decided, you know, okay, we're going to talk about this because it makes sense. It sounds good. Like, it's a relative strength. When it gets under or over, it's a buy, it's a sell. What's the story with that?
That's a good question. I do not know. I have no idea. The relative strength is, you know, one piece of information. You could use a MACD. You could use a stochastic. They're math-based indicators. I prefer to look at price, volume, and time. Only price pays. Volume tells us the intensity of the buyers and sellers, and time is how we can say, here's what my time, it's a personal thing, whether my time is a day trader or a swing trader or an investor. There's nothing, I'm not knocking the RSA, and I don't think you are either.
I am.
The RSI in particular.
I'm knocking it. I'm knocking it as a tool that seems to be used as the all knowing that I'm going to buy if it gets to this level. I'm going to sell if it gets to that. It's overheated. It's overdone. It's underbought. It's oversold. It just seems like they've got a little bit crazy about this whole thing.
I haven't seen a lot of it because I don't watch that channel very much, but CNBC that is. But if it's something they're latching onto, I certainly don't understand it. I don't even use relative strength indicator. Right. I'm price, volume, and time. So I use a couple moving averages.
Amen.
And of course, the volume weighted average price, which I think is the superior blend of price, volume, and time.
So we're going to get to that in a second. VWAP for short, volume weighted average price. But I want to ask you about timeframes because that's something interesting. So those that have listened to me know we have a product that we utilize. That is a plugin for TradeStation. It's under the Trigger Charts company name. And basically what it does is same thing, volume, and it looks at price, and it looks at time and all this stuff. But one of the things that people ask me all the time is, you know, what is an appropriate time frame? Can I use this on tick charts? And I'm thinking, why would anybody be using tick charts? Which is, just to explain this further, it's every tick is a move on the chart. Or, you know, potentially moving versus a 1 minute chart has a bar that fills up with 1 minute data, whether it's the volume, whether it's the price, the high, low, close range, and all that. It seems to me that you'd want a little bit more data stuffed into your bar, into the information that you're looking at in order to get an accurate depiction of what's really going on rather than something super short. And I don't even know how you trade on tick data.
I don't do it. I mean, in the past, I've previously looked at maybe like 500 ticks for a bar, just when there's a pretty active market. But and that's for really short-term scalping. That's if you want to be sitting there really with the needle in your arm, imagining trade after trade and you know, producing a ton of commissions for your broker more than anything.
Right. But you agree that short-term, I mean, what about a 1 minute?
You know, I'll use a 1 minute. So when it comes to stocks, I'll look at a 1 minute maybe for the entry because I'm sitting in front of the machine, you know, pretty much full time, Andrew. So if I can get that extra bit of you know, perceived accuracy by looking at the very short term time frame, I will do that. But once the trade is on, I'm not really referring to a 1 minute chart. I think, you know, generally 5 minute time frames are sufficient for swing trading, which is where I try to focus my attentions.
But that's on price. Now let's talk about VWAP. So VWAP is now a combination of volume, the amount of shares that are being traded at a particular price, and the VWAP is an average weighted volume. So it's a little bit different than just simply the volume, the price. It kind of does a moving or an averaging of the price over time. But what is a VWAP time frame that you like to use?
Okay, let me explain it really quick, easily for the audience, which is, you know, dollar cost averaging. If you put $1,000 per month into XYZ fund, and the, you know, in January you buy 50 shares because it's at $20 per share. Well, it goes to $25 per share, so then you buy 40 shares the next month. At the end of the year, at the end of 12 months, you might have, let's say, 583 shares at an average price of $19.87. I'm not sure my math worked right there.
Okay.
But the point is, that's your volume weighted average price. You put a set dollar amount each month, but you bought a different amount of volume. So one month you bought 50 shares, another month you bought 40, then you bought 37 as it rallied, and then you bought 53 as the stock declined. So your volume weighted average price, the average price is, what did I say, $19.87. That's how you measure your success or failure from. Well, same thing. We can calculate a volume-weighted average price, let's say on the S&P 500, using the beginning of today. So each and every transaction will be weighted for volume. So it tells us the true average price paid. Not a time, not a random time, like a 50 period moving average. So you can use it on any time frame. So if you're a day trader, you can use it on a 1 minute chart or your tick chart if you want. Or you can anchor it to, and when I say anchor, that means set the beginning of that period. So I can set it from the date that a company reported earnings. So from that date forward, what is the sentiment of the stock? It might be, you know, it might have gapped up 10%, but if it's below that volume weighted average price and the volume weighted average price from that gap is declining, it tells us people are taking money off the table. Mm-hmm. It tells us the true sentiment. You know, people try to measure sentiment by taking polls and looking at analyst reports and that, but this gives us the true average price paid, and you have to look at it and say, well, how would the average participant feel if it was below that level or above that level? How would the average short feel? What would they likely be motivated to do? Would they be, you know, staying on the offer, putting more supply out to scare other longs out of their position because they're slowly bleeding money? So it's really a sentiment indicator measured from any point in time. You can choose that. I like to use earnings reports from the beginning of the year, from an FDA report, shorter term time frame. Sometimes, from a Federal Reserve announcement, you can get some, you'll see price action revolve around that. IPOs have been fantastic with it because everyone has the same starting point.
It's right. That's a good
supply
point.
And demand. It's.
So it's interesting because when we use Market Profile, we stuff the data into a range of time. And that same question of, you know, what time frame do I use? And when we're using trying to stuff it in, I like to use personally, I like to use like 30 minutes of information that I could see where was that level of, you know, where was the high level, where's low level, and kind of a Market Profile gives you the whole range. It gives you a high volume node, which is pretty much the VWAP, but it gives you that whole range and it kind of shows me a distinct image, a footprint, a fingerprint of what people are doing in the market. Very similar to the VWAP, whereas you can't see that with price and with that volume on the bottom. You know how you have a chart and a lot of charts set up that they show you horizontal movement across time and then these vertical bars of volume across the bottom.
Yep.
And it's interesting, and it shows us that at that time, and that's time-based, that time there was that volume, but again, you can't really, you know, what was the real price that was paid for that and how does that blend out over time? And I always say that whether it's VWAP or it's Market Profile, again, it's volume-based pricing movement, right? That's what it is. Volume-based pricing, it tells me where the players are putting their money to work, where the line in the sand is to really understand what's happening in the market rather than just some random pricing that goes on. Cause you don't know if it's a bad print. You don't know if somebody had to sell something because, sell something and it was a small dollar amount I want to know where the bulk is, where people are really playing, right? Isn't that the point?
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, it ties in great with the market profile or volume at price, you know, is called as well. By the way, someone was telling me the other day that they had your plugin on the TradeStation and were really impressed with it. So no. I don't use TradeStation, but maybe I'll have to take a look.
I have to give you a tour and check it out. It's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool colors, if nothing else, that we set
Excellent.
up. You know, so let's just get back to this other thing. So a lot of people have either a bias towards maybe, again, utilizing PE ratios or news flow or macro or something else. If someone was really has been historically using fundamental analysis, let's use that as a key. You know, they're like, okay, you know, how does, you know, what, maybe they're using some kind of a PEG ratio. They're looking at PEs. They're looking at, I don't know, something. And they always need to know the answer to the question, why?
Right.
Why? Why did the market go up today? So Barron's lately, I was just talking about this on DH Unplugged this week, bugs the hell out of me. Barron's has a, I think, a daily article now that the headline reads something like, the Dow went down 66 because Apple was shunned or some crap like that, right? You know, whatever it is. It's like, you know, the answer to the question why, well, you don't even ask the question why ever, do you?
I don't know. I mean, I'm aware that there are certain catalysts in the news, like earnings reports for a company. I want to, you know, I know that that's going to become a potential catalyst. I know a jobs report is a potential catalyst. But to say that that's the only factor and that's why the market moved that day, there is a lot of times it's simply the market broke support. It hit stops and then shorts piled in and it hit more stops and people panicked. I mean, that is the news. Price is often the news and people will search and search for what was the reason? How come? And the wise ass answer is always, well, there were more sellers than buyers. there aren't more sellers than buyers, but there's more aggressive sellers than the buyers are willing to satisfy that supply, right?
And it's supply actually and the real answer to that, there is more sellers to buyers. It's not that. It's that the buyers are not willing to buy at higher prices. That's what it is.
Yeah, and the sellers are motivated to say, hey, I want to get out now. And the buyers are saying, well, we're not going to pay you this for it. Come down to my level and we can transact business there, but not up here. You bring it down a little further, I'll stick some bids in and be a little bit more tempted. But I'm not the dope here.
Yep. Tell me about your daily prep. So, you know, there's thousands of stocks out there. And of course, one of the things you do is like look at, okay, what's moving this morning? But there's, you know, things move throughout the day, right? There's pre-market moves, there's during the day moves. What do you use to, you know, set up your day, plan your day, find new ideas, and make sure that you are, you know, staying on track?
You know, the surprising thing actually might be that I don't look for the stocks that are in play. I don't look for the hot trades that are moving. I find that they become too noisy, and there's too many opinions and too much volatility around them. So what I look for is you know, the same thing I've been doing for 15 plus years is I look at the end of each day, I look at a list of about 250 stocks. I look at them manually. So I have a daily chart, I have a 30-minute chart, a 15-minute, a 5-minute, and a weekly time frame that populate all at once. So I'm manually looking for through that, and I'm not looking for longs and I'm not looking for shorts. Instead, what I'm looking at is saying, where are the opportunities? What looks like a good risk reward? Isn't that interesting? I have three stocks that look like good short setups. I didn't come in looking for short setups, but if that's what the market's telling me, it's to me more important than going to the market and saying, here's what I want, here's my shopping list. I instead want to say, what do you have available to me? Really, truly listening to the message of the market. So I've been doing this long enough that going through 250 stocks will take me about an hour. I'll get those down to about maybe 15 that I, you know, have an interest in, and then really narrow it down to two or three of what might be the best potential swing trade opportunities where it looks like I've got enough potential reward relative to my perceived risk to say, okay, you know, I will take a position in this. I'll check to see if earnings are due or anything that might kind of screw up the chart pattern. That if the chart pattern is clean and I can manage risk, then I will, you know, get involved. If I think that the market is overall too volatile to take large positions, but I still have good setups, I'll you know, reduce my share size. So I'm looking for swing trades, and I define that as, you know, typically three days is what I would really ideally like to hold as a minimum, up to maybe 2 weeks.
So in a market that has more volatility, as you mentioned, and that there is the potential for, as we're seeing more now than we saw, let's say, a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
So so you reduce your position size. You don't have to trade, of course. You don't make yourself trade, right? Like, it's like, I have to trade something.
No, that's something we all do this as we mature. I'm way less active than I used to be. I'm much choosier, and I don't mind missing a trade. Every once in a while, there's that one that's, oh, I knew what I should have done this or that. Mm-hmm. But those, I don't really get that feeling too much, because I've missed so many good trades, but I've missed so many big losses as well, that it's just part of doing business. It's not really something to worry over. But I will, you know, say, hey, I have to be more aware of that type of situation going forward. So it's a manual process. It's a process I enjoy, though, too. It's like a treasure hunt every day. It doesn't really get boring.
Right. So in terms of your charting now, there are some people that like to use candles. There's some that like to use high, low, close bars. There's people that maybe do different things. Have you ever used point and figure charts? I have yet to figure that out.
I have used them. And actually, so when I was studying for the Chartered Market Technicians exam, that was part of the program that I actually enjoyed, that learning them. The problem with point and figure, they're great at showing the, you know, the pricing, but they're difficult to come by. They're just not in a lot of charting packages. And when they are in different charting packages, there's what's known as the size of the box. So it's X's and O's, and they will move based on, you know, 3-point reversal. I don't want to confuse your listeners, but you have to customize the box size, and they're just cumbersome to work with. I think they're great at representing supply and demand, but I use candles generally, only because they look better than open, high, low, close. It's whatever works for you, you know, visually. And I think the majority of people tend to use candles, so it's easier for me to present them that way to people as well.
Yeah, I mean, I use candles. I mean, I very rarely, every once in a while, if I use a certain chart, I'll use a line just to kind of like show, so there's not that extra junk in between,
you know, take the noise out. You know,
let's see what's going on long term here, you know, in a big picture or a mountain chart for that matter. But candles for trading, I've always found to be a little bit easier. Like you said, a lot of people use that quite often. So how do you prevent yourself from not only not trading, as you mentioned, you get pickier and all that, but how do you make sure that you don't get yourself into a situation that is trouble?
Oh, I wish I knew them.
What I mean by that is you can get into something, right? At any given time, you can get into something, but it's like, okay, I'm doing this, but now it's not gone the way I thought it was going to go, and I now need to get out. How do you make sure that you have those stops on your, not stops in terms of a sell stop, but those precautions available?
You know, the sad truth is I surprise myself once in a while with my trades. Maybe once or twice a year this happens. And it's so damn frustrating that I will be so disciplined about just getting out, peeling the Band-Aid, moving on. Once in a while, though, for some strange reason, some alter ego comes in and starts trading my account. And that person knows better than the market, they think. And those are always my biggest losses, when I just you know, when I have a feeling, or I, you know, the worst thing I can that I can personally do is start reading the news about this stock. If I start reading the news about it, then I know my reason for being involved in that stock is no longer valid. I'm trying to justify it and avoid taking the pain, and I'm in there for ego, that I don't want to get hurt. So, like I said, it's hard.
It's listen, there is emotions get in the way from time to time, and none of us are perfect, no matter how much you want to be. Otherwise, you'd be robotic and you wouldn't be there. But let me ask you this, because this is a situation that I got into. So take some time back. I don't know, a year ago or so, I looked at a stock and I looked at a variety of fundamentals. I looked at the stock price. I said, this doesn't work for me. So I shorted the stock. It was stamps.com. So I shorted the stock, and let's just say, I don't know if these are the exact prices, but I'll give you examples. I shorted the stock at, let's say, 100. Stock comes out with some earnings. It goes to like $1.20. So I'm like, you know what? 20% loss. That's my limit on this. I'm done. Okay. Stock goes up to about 180, give or take a few dollars. You know, at that point, I'm like, you know, I was burned once. I'm not going near this again, but I still think this is not worth it, and I still think there's a problem here. And lo and behold, next time the earnings come out, it dumps from 180 to 90. Ugh. Now, of course, I'm not going to get into the short. Why?
Down too much.
Down
already.
Too much. Comes out with earnings 3 days ago. It goes from 90 to 45.
I'm looking at that, yeah.
How do you get yourself regrouped into that and not be in a situation where you're like, that you're believing in your own stuff, but yet you're, I mean, how do you snap yourself out of that?
With a stock like Stamps, I would have definitely not caught that second one, and probably not the first one either, because it was still above some rising moving averages. So it's about, you know, having those technical rule based decisions that say, you know, if it's above a rising 50-day moving average, I'm not going to go near it on the long side, or if it's I'm on the short side rather. It's just a matter of process of elimination and trying to be as objective as possible. And, you know, like you said, we're human. Our opinion does get in the way sometimes. And, you know, anyone will tell you that their biggest losses are, you know, if they're truthful, are their own fault. We get what we deserve, that, you know, we thought we were smarter than the market.
Right.
And it's always that, you know, dumb mistake that I knew I shouldn't have done. And it's so easy to see after the fact. But when you're doing it and you're saying, well, I'll buy a little, or I'll buy a little bit more because this must be the bottom. And then you just get slammed again. At some point, you got to just say, you know what? I'm an idiot. I got to just forget about this. And then you start fighting the emotions of, well, if I sell now, watch this.
I'm going to mark the bottom. Oh, you know what's going to happen now if I sell.
Right. Yeah. And then maybe it does go up, and that's the worst thing that could happen, because now you're, you know, trained. Hey, well, they do come back, right?
Right. Yeah. But everything comes back. Should have known.
Think about this. So I'm looking at this Stamps chart. I mean, less than a year ago, this thing was what, $300? And here it is at 39?
Yep.
It was, you know, 285. Mm-hmm. And here it is at $39. There's no such thing as down too much when there's still sellers in the market.
Yeah, the theory is it could. Now everybody's like, well, maybe I'll buy it now. But it could still, truthfully, it still could go down. Another one that I have is Restoration Hardware, RH. I traded that once. We just kind of like came out, made a little bit, whatever. But that's another one that I'm like, it went up, it came back down. Is this another one that's in line for another stamps.com sort of move?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's also a little thinly traded. But, you know, unless people are still buying $25,000 couches on a regular basis.
Not me, never was.
Possible? It's possible. But yeah, you're right about that self-fulfilling prophecy where you think, oh, you know, if I sell now, oh, you know, it's going to happen. It's going to turn around. One thing that I do, I'll tell you something on options. As I tell people all the time, Brian, options, you have to be right at least three times. You have to be right on price. You have to be right on direction. And you have to be right on time. Any one of those that are not right, you lose on buying. I'm saying buying options, right?
Right. So, it's like a parlay bet, right?
Right.
I'm taking the over under the team and how many touchdown passes he throws. Come
right.
on.
In the first quarter.
Right.
In the first quarter. So now What's interesting is I've made a new rule that anytime I personally buy options, because I believe that this is going to happen. And again, that's a belief issue, options, right? Because it's a, you know, if I'm taking it out for long, I always go at least a month longer than
that's
I think.
That's a great policy. I like that policy.
At least a month longer. And it, every time I do that, I always say, maybe I should just go one more month on top of it just for good measure. I mean, I picked up some VIX 2 weeks ago. Oh no, yep. A week and a half ago, I went VIX long when it was about 13 and I doubled up on it real quick in a week or so, but it's just not, still not moving that much. I don't do that that often, but I was pretty confident that this whole deal was going to unfold and we were a little bit toppy and when everything was going up, no matter what, I said, you know what? Maybe it's a little bit towards the end of a low cycle on the VIX. Again, I don't do that that often because VIX is a really screwed up instrument.
It sure is. It's kind of a pet peeve of mine. It's seldom that you find someone who can talk intelligently about it and really understand how to use it. I don't look at it often. When it starts to spike, it gets my interest a little bit, but most of the time, it's to me, a waste of time. It doesn't tell you anything about the market.
But the only thing it does tell you probably would be if it is spiking, let's say it's a 20, let's say that number, yep. It should tell you about position sizing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So that's the tool to use it for. It's not necessarily a tradable tool. It's a position sizing tool and it's an alert tool. It's an awareness tool. I think both sides. I think if it gets too low or if it gets too high, it gives you both sides, right? So if it gets too high, you realize that maybe things are getting a little panicky and a little bit done and kind of, you know, maybe there's something I could do here back on the long side and I could feel more comfortable. If it's in between towards the high, it's like maybe I should reduce position sizing for swing trades. And if it's too low, it kind of sets off my alarm for, you know what, maybe people are a little too giddy here.
I like that description, an awareness tool. It's kind of similar to a 50-day moving averages, a level of interest.
Right.
It doesn't mean I'm going to take action, but it tells me, all right, let's take a look on a shorter term time frame and let's see if there's actually evidence that the buyers are stepping in and the supply is slowing down. It's where we take notice, that's all.
Yeah. So tell me where people can find your stuff. You have a great book out, a large hardcover. If you follow Brian on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle?
Alpha Trends, ALPHATRENDS.
He always, magical how he has these really good looking people holding his book all the time. That's not Photoshopped, of course, as
not
we tell us. Not Photoshopped.
No.
It's a technical analysis on multiple time frames, I believe it is.
That's correct.
That
You're
is.
Actually, you liked that book from the start, Andrew.
Yeah,
that
was, I did.
10 years ago, and you're actually on the back cover of it as an endorsement.
Big fan of that book because you know why? I'll tell you why. Seriously, I'm going to be straight up, okay? It's big. It's oversized. It's not a normal size book. It's like a textbook.
Right.
Secondly, it's color. I know it says
that was important.
Seriously.
That was important to me to make it in color.
And there's a lot of
the other ones are.
And the other thing that I like about books, like it's a lot of pictures. What's not to like?
It appeals to children.
Yeah, exactly. What's not to like about it? So that's first. Second of all, I know you've been doing some work on Yahoo Finance, right? What's the story with that?
I don't remember how I got in contact with them years ago, but they like to have me on once a week to take a look at some technicals. Their audience is fortunately, you know, when they went full time with Yahoo Finance went full time, 8 hours of live programming per day in January, they said their audience wants to hear more, some technical analysis. And I've had a relationship with them for a while, and so now I'm on there once a week, typically on Thursdays. Yesterday I was talking about Disney and a setup in there. It hasn't done what I want it to do to be a buy yet, but it gives people a different way of seeing the stocks, maybe that they're just hearing the sound bites on.
Yep, good stuff. You can visit Brian over on alphatrends.net. I encourage you to do so because a lot of really great information from his regular videos that he'll go over and show you what's happening with the markets to his various chart tables and things like that. And also for an education that is, I think, I'll tell you straight, I think it's unbiased and it's very helpful. I can't stress the educational component enough. There's a lot of education there. I learn something all the time. You know, he has it very straightforward, marks up his charts, talks fast through them, zips through charts, talking about what's happening, gives you the quote unquote why things are happening from a technical standpoint, not the, well, you know what, there was a meteor shower today in Wisconsin and, therefore, potato stocks got hurt. That's not right. What the story is. It's more of a 20,000 foot view of what's happening and why things are happening in the setup.
I think that's a great description, and I appreciate it, because I try to make them educational as well. I'm not just saying, okay, do this, do that. In fact, I don't want people to just say, hey, Brian said buy this or that. That's not the point. The point is, here's the logic behind it. Does it make sense to you personally? How can you embrace it? Or maybe it just doesn't make sense to you and you move on. Fine. You know, that doesn't bother me at all. Mm-hmm. But I try to make it so that people can understand what technical analysis is telling us. And as you said, objectively, and I appreciate that, because that's how I, you know, pride myself in my analysis, is to be objective in doing so.
Yep. Maybe one of these days we'll do a rapid fire chart fest. You know, not like a whole day thing. I mean, just a rapid fire chart fest. We'll do like a live webinar kind of thing and just whack a whole bunch, you know, and then what will happen is, I think the listeners and the viewers can start to accumulate a level of knowledge, because a lot of things repeat, right? A lot of the same themes repeat themselves.
Definitely.
And yes. Maybe we can kind of get them educated in that. Well, we'll talk about that. I just thought of that just now. So
that sounds fun. Here's what we have to do, though. Here's what I think is missing from mainstream media is they talk about a stock just in generic terms, mainly as, okay, buy it and hold on to it. They don't talk about risk management and they don't talk about time frame.
Right.
So let's do that. And we'll say, what I like to say is, if you're a longer term, you know, investor, here's how you look at it. If you're a swing trader, here's how you look at it. Here's where you might want to manage risk. So let's conquer that and make financial media better.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. All right, let's keep on working on it. Keep the conversation going. AlphaTrends.net, Brian Shannon, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Great to be on as always, Andrew.
Thanks. Great stuff with Brian, AlphaTrends.net. Make sure to check out all the things that he has available. I learn a lot when he's on. Hopefully you do as well. And we covered a lot of territory today, covered the idea of technical analysis and broke it down into the area of VWAP, of course, and market profile. If you do want to check out some of the things that we have available on trigger charts and how we look at that, go to triggercharts.com. There's some videos on there and shows you some really cool things in terms of how it's applied to the chart. We're going to mention that next week we have Danielle DiMartino Booth as the guest scheduled. So we're going to get an inside look at some of the thinking of what's going on with the Fed. And until then, I want to wish you a happy weekend, wonderful day. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.